From Wyoming Public Media, I'm Micah Schweitzer. In 2013, America's first transcontinental highway turned 100 years old, and in the summer, the Wyoming State Historic Preservation Office received a grant to survey buildings and landscapes along what's now Interstate 80 and old U.S. 30. So, in honor of the Lincoln Highway's centennial, we'll make some stops at some of Wyoming's iconic mid-century roadside landmarks. Let's begin our series by speaking with Beth King and Aaron Dorbin from the State Historic Preservation Office. So, Aaron Dorbin, you were the Buildings and Landscapes Survey intern, which meant that you spent a lot of the summer on the road. And what did you see?
I was so lucky to be welcomed into people's lives, whether or not it was for, you know, an hour or an entire afternoon or throughout the length of my time in Wyoming. You know, I saw everything from the big roadside teepee in Egbert to a tucked away Pete's Rock and Rye Club in Evanston and all of the cabin courts that still remain where travelers were stopping along the Lincoln Highway in the 30s and 40s, and then the more modern 60s motels. I just saw and heard Wyoming come alive along the roadway.
Now, I know as preservationists, you will balk at my phrasing of this question, but I have to ask, you know, you look at some structures from the 50s and the 60s, and what's the value behind some of these structures that might look, you know, ugly to modern eyes?
Well, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, Micah. So there's always going to be someone who has no interest in a certain type of building or a certain style of architecture, and then there's going to be someone for whom all of their interest is channeled in that direction. And every building is important in its historic context. And that's really what survey work does. It takes an individual gas station, an individual diner, an individual motel, and it fleshes out the story so that you can see the greater context and meaning for that one building.
So nothing exists in isolation.
I think that is definitely true when you're talking about a major transportation corridor.
Yeah, I think that with structures from the 50s and 60s, a lot of the individuals that, you know, donated their time to take me around and kind of, you know, look at the landscape and identify these places for the survey, when I would point out something, they would just say, oh, that place? Oh, I didn't even think of it. Because to them, you know, this is just common everyday architecture. They grew up with it. People tend to sort of take it for granted. So it's important to conduct surveys like this because you're looking at places with kind of a new eye. You probably drive past it 100 times, but when you have 5 of these stations and, you know, your guide is able to connect, you know, say, oh, in the 1950s, I worked at this place and I went on my first date over here at the cafe and this truck stop, and, you know, they're telling a story of a place in a particular time. So I think there was, you know, great value. And once you got people starting to talk about these places that they kind of forgot that they lived next door to, they really, you know, came alive again too. And I got amazing stories, and I think it reminded them of the significance of place, you know, in their own personal history.
And Aaron Dorbin, that's a good point to make, that you're not just pointing your camera and your microphone at empty or static structures. You're talking to people. This is a human story.
Absolutely. And I think that when I started doing surveys, you know, I tend to just, you know, take the photograph, and it was kind of outside of the context of the place and the lives of the people of that community. So, you know, really trying to incorporate sort of a documentary approach, you know, using place-based digital storytelling as a method to, you know, relate the story of the Lincoln Highway to travelers today. That was really my goal.
And Beth, what's next? I mean, preservation is always this moving target because new things are considered historic, you know, with every passing day.
I know for me personally, I've been so encouraged by the success of this project. And some of that is due to Erin's expertise and her ability to connect with the people she met along the way. And we're so grateful for her. But we'd love to do the rest of the state. Automotive tourism does not begin and end with the Lincoln Highway. And they're great transportation corridors for people who were visiting Yellowstone and Grand Teton and people who were going to the Black Hills. And so many communities in other parts of the state need to be inventoried for their roadside architecture as well.
Well, Beth King is a historic preservation specialist at the State Historic Preservation Office. Erin Dorbin spent the summer as a buildings and landscape survey intern, and she's the producer of a series of postcards from the Lincoln Highway. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we've loaded up with context, so let's hit the road. Chances are, if you've driven the stretch east of Cheyenne along I-80 or Old Highway 30, you've seen it. That colossal white and turquoise roadside gem, the teepee. You've probably also wondered who lives there, or simply, why a teepee? Producer Erin Dorbin sent us this postcard with some questions from Egbert.
I've seen a corn palace.
One of the best remaining examples of roadside architecture in Wyoming, yet people today know very little about its origins. To unveil the mystery of the teepee, I made it a point during my three-month survey to ask everyone, what do you know about that teepee in Egbert? And one day, I took a chance and drove up to ask the owner himself.
Yeah, my name is Lawrence Anaya. I saw this teepee back in 1979. I used to work in Pines Bluff, the potato factory. And like everybody else, we always used to say, I wonder what's in that teepee or what's it like and stuff. So, and then one day my girlfriend says, you know what? My boss said there's a teepee for sale. And the minute I saw it, I know I took advantage and bought it. Now I'm the proud owner of the teepee at 1091 County Road 154.
During the 10 years Anaya has owned the teepee, he's followed in the footsteps of the couple who previously owned it.
And they used to take pretty good care of it. You know, that man kept it pretty nice when he owned it. I'd like to do the same with it. So I've been working on it, and we got in here, we cleaned it all up, painted her, fixed the outside of it, planted trees around it.
Anaya has been an excellent steward of the teepee with the help of his nearest neighbor, Al Kane.
I met Uncle Al, how long has it been now, Uncle Al? 10 years or better?
Probably.
Uncle Al knew the previous owners of the teepee. Did he know anything about its past?
It was moved up here. It used to be on Old 30 on Lincoln Highway. I don't know if it really had a name.
As far as I know, it was a bar back in 1960, 65, 70, as far as I know. Later on, I heard they turned it into a gift store.
I finally found some answers on a black and white postcard advertising a teepee-shaped souvenir shop and bar called The War Whoop in Egbert. The War Whoop. At least we've now got the name. But it is surprising that's all we know about a building that has been drawing the attention of travelers for more than half a century. Did Anaya ever think about opening it back up as a tourist shop? He says his sister thinks it may be a good idea.
Well, she told me how to make a tourist place out of it, a tourist trap out of it, and get people to come in and tour it and stuff like that. There's a lot of people come through tours and stuff, you know, and they ask me if they can take pictures. I'm sure, you know, go right ahead, you know. Very few of them that I brought inside, but I let them take all the photos they like outside.
But the best part of living in the teepee is that it's...
peaceful living.
Yes. No neighbors.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to move Uncle Al about another mile, a little farther, I guess, pretty soon.
Anaya believes in preservation. He operates a classic car restoration shop across from the teepee. But he's also juggling health concerns with his desire to keep it in top-notch condition.
It might be greed or it might be appreciation that you have it and you don't really want to let it go, but... if I do sell it, I'd like maybe somebody in the family first choice.
The preservation of teepee structures like the War Whoop is controversial. Some preservationists ask, how do we honor the architectural history of American travel without promoting stereotypical attitudes toward Native Americans? But there's a hope that buildings like these can be used for education and at the same time still catch the eye of motorists along I-80 day after day. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Erin Dorbin.
Let's continue the route west along Wyoming's Lincoln Highway. In preparation for your upcoming road trip, you've already dialed the destination into your GPS, you've read online reviews to choose where you'll sleep, and you probably booked the Hampton instead of that quaint motor court, right? Well, with fewer travelers choosing rooms at smaller mid-century era motels, how are owners adapting their businesses? Aaron visited the Wyoming Motel in Cheyenne to find out.
On a gorgeous late summer day, Victor Pisano is listening to oldies and fixing up his Jeep in the parking lot.
My name is Victor Pisano. I live here at the Wyoming Motel. I've been here maybe 20 years. I enjoy it here. I like the people here. I mean, it's like a little community by itself.
He explains how tenants' long-term residencies forged this community at the motel.
23 has been here for 5, 6 years. 14 has been here for about 8 years, so everybody stays. The owner's Dieter Coletti. He's very nice. He helps people.
Pisano has raised his 17-year-old daughter and the family pets here, too. It's a lot like any other neighborhood in Cheyenne. Even the interior layout of the former single-stay motel rooms have been altered to accommodate families. Pisano describes them as...
I'd say like adobe homes with a tile roof. When they made the rooms, they weren't all separate rooms. Now there's bedrooms and living room and your bathroom. It's more of apartment style.
I'm Dieter Coletti. As of yesterday, August 13th, I've owned a motel and a luxury diner for 31 years. Well, I used to work in Wheatland on a power plant, and Patty Bennett, she's a realtor, a friend of mine. I got laid off in Wheatland and I had nothing. And she said, I got a project for you. I said, hell, I don't know nothing about no motel. You know, she says, because it was in pretty bad shape. It was a bad shape. She says, you know, you like to work and I know you can do it. So I did it. Number one, first of all, I had to get rid of hundreds of cockroaches. I mean, it was infested. Patch was his name. You know, he was my first exterminator. And he was about half crazy because he wouldn't put on no mask or nothing.
From behind his office desk, Coletti directs me to a metal rack on the wall with 29 numbered slots, each holding a receipt for one of the motel's 29 units.
Most of my clientele is not credit card clientele. So we deal with payroll checks and cash. If I know you very good, personal check, if I know you for 100 years, that may be. Otherwise, no. In 31 years, I've been stuck with two checks, so I've been pretty fortunate. I look for the long term. A lot of my people are on disability or some kind of social security, and some of them are working folks, you know. Like last year, I had about a 99.4 occupancy rate.
The late 1980s saw an increase in the number of Americans taking up residence in the country's aging motel stock. Some are on a fixed income and can't afford more conventional housing options. Others are seeking more flexibility in their living arrangement. On a day like today, under the bright blue sky and white puffy clouds, the Wyoming Motel pops. The pale pink U-shaped structure with clean turquoise trim gleams. The motel's massive, brightly painted red, teal, and black Indian chief-shaped sign exclaims, Wyoming Motel and Cafe to passersby.
The chief, you know, the chief, that's my, you know, good luck charm. You know, he's my spirit in the sky. There used to be neon. You know, that would light up. But not the whole sign, the motel up there and stuff would light up. But boy, I tell you what, neon's expensive.
While Coletti is no longer looking to attract overnighting guests with the sign, it still draws hundreds of motorists and roadside architecture fans every year. And for those who stay longer, the chief welcomes them home. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Aaron Dorbin.
On now to another classic motel along the Lincoln Highway where we can just stay the night. Aaron sent this postcard from Rock Springs.
Springs Motel.
Norman and Irma Gillespie own the Springs Motel on the eastern end of Rock Springs.
We built it in 1968.
I'm Norman Gillespie. Well, I picked the name because it's Rock Springs.
We built it. This was the busy end of town because on the other end they didn't have very much. But then in the last about couple of years, they built the Hampton and all those big motels.
Motel time again. The
motel business along the Lincoln Highway has drastically changed since the 1960s, and travelers now require a different kind of accommodation. At the Springs, there are no flat-screen TVs or Wi-Fi, but the rooms are spotless. Return guest Donald Roberry describes his as...
It's cozy, it's nice, it's quiet. I mean, nobody bothers
no
any...
No, nothing, no.
Well, we get,
well, get drunk, but no.
Oh, we are rowdy, yeah.
Companies used to stay here, and they still, they're not working here as much as they used to, but when they come through, they always stop here. But there's just not that much work here. The oil field's gone up to the Dakotas, and there just isn't, you know. Oh, yeah, I get tourists. The last year was real good. This year was quite slow.
Everything went to hell on that highway there, because you get your kids in the car and stop, fill up full of gas, it costs you $50. You go in a restaurant, it costs you another $50. And if they have to stop two or three times, they got a hell of an investment then, really.
I'm 86 and my husband's 86. And
well, I'll tell you, we're getting too old for this, and she isn't too well. So we had young girls helping us rent the rooms and everything, you know. Now, nobody wants to do that kind of work. Don't ask me why, because I don't know.
I liked the office. I did a lot of the office work and stuff, and waiting on the customers. I still do that.
We're just going to stay just for one night.
Okay. You want me to give you your receipt on that?
Yeah. There you go. Have a good day.
You're welcome. But with my age and stuff, I have a bookkeeper that does a lot of my books and stuff.
The couple were in the motel business prior to the Springs, running a former Lincoln Highway service station and motel.
Al's Motel.
But back then, they always had help from their family.
When my daughter was younger and still in school, she used to help with the cleaning, and she used to always say that she was going to run the office.
Now that their kids are grown, they have just one full-time employee. So after 40 years of operating and maintaining the Springs, what are their plans for their roadside icon?
Well, no, we're going to sell it. We had a guy this spring come in and want to buy it, but I guess we changed his mind because we wasn't in no hurry.
You know, it's paid for and everything, and we can close the doors if we want to and open them when we want to.
I'd just like to walk away from it and turn it over to one of my kids. We have to pick somebody that it'll buy it that's got the money, because if you don't, they'll close it up, just like they're doing that one down there, because it's a hell of a job. And in this business, you got to do your own repairs and stuff, because you can't make it by hiring a guy down the street $30 an hour, you know.
I don't even know what town I'm in.
With fewer travelers on the road, Norman has unwittingly invited a new group of residents to the Springs.
He really likes these birds, and he feeds them all the time.
I started feeding them last winter because it was cold. And now they figure, hell, that guy could feed us when it's hot, too. I don't know how you get rid of them. They're like people, you know. If you feed them, they stay there.
That old number.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Erin Dorbin.
Our final stop on Wyoming's Lincoln Highway looks just like a shuttered roadside business. The exterior is overgrown and the door is hard to find. By the look of things, you may wonder if this is the kind of place you'll need a secret handshake to enter. What is this place exactly? It's Pete's Rock and Rye Club in Evanston. Producer Erin Dorbin made it past the entrance and sent us this postcard.
There is one place along the Lincoln Highway in Evanston that everyone over a certain age knows, Pete's Rock and Rye Club. But patrons are pretty tight-lipped about the rowdy nights they've spent there. Luckily, I caught former patron Bill Schreiber and a buddy of his at the exact moment they drove up to reminisce. Who else pulled up? Owner and local legend, Stan Taggart. I witnessed their reunion.
Are you Stan?
Yeah.
You look like Stan. Hey. My name's Bill. And I used to come here 28 years ago.
What are you doing in Evanston 25 years ago?
Working for Schlumberger. the blue truck. Nice. I was working for Schlumberger as an engineer. But I recognize you, so that's really pretty cool. I'm glad to see you're still running it once in a while.
Schreiber shared with him some moments he remembered best.
When I was here a long time ago, you had a jukebox where, and actually you'd let us bring some of the 45s and actually stick them in there and play them and everything, and it was just a great place to hang out.
So just as Schreiber and I were about to get back on the road, Taggart offered...
You want him to walk in? Do you? You got time?
Did he want to walk in? Of course. Schreiber jumped at the opportunity.
Going in?
You want to relive it?
He wants to go.
Yeah.
We don't know when we're going to be back. He's going in. We're going in. I got memories flooding back. Holy cow. Oh, this is awesome. This is awesome. How long have you owned this place?
I said 68.
So is this digital or is this jukebox have records?
45s.
Okay. That's what I remember was putting... We brought you some records and you put some 45s in.
Yeah.
It was exciting to observe Schreiber's return to this one-of-a-kind tavern where he enjoyed some of the most memorable nights of his youth. Those days were during the oil boom of the 80s when he and others worked hard, long hours. Workers relied on places like Pete's to help them unwind.
So where would you sit?
Usually in a booth. Wherever there was a seat available, probably.
What else did he remember? I was still looking for one of those stories no one else was willing to reveal on record about their wild nights here.
Actually, I remember, so we were on call 24 hours a day, okay? So we weren't always working. There were different trucks, and so if people were in front of you, the odds of going out in the middle of the night were extremely small. So I remember being here with a friend of mine who comes in barging in the door as the manager, and he goes up to him. He's like, "You got a job in Casper, Wyoming. Get your butt in the car and get going." And, of course, been drinking and partying. It's like, get the car and drive for 5 hours. So just I have a lot of memories like that.
Stan Taggart revealed a bit more about his daily routine and 45-year run as owner of Pete's Rock and Rye Club.
I'll be 80 in February, and I ran 3.5 hours this morning and then went and got a load of wood.
Yeah, well, you look about 50, I reckon. You're well-preserved, so I wouldn't change anything you're doing.
The bar is now open exclusively on Fridays and Saturdays.
6 p.m. till they give up.
As Bill and Brian left, they vowed to come back the next Friday or Saturday they were in town. If you find yourself at Pete's Rock and Rye Club, be ready to discuss your current reading list and last night's episode of the Colbert Report. Taggart is a well-read, quick-witted gentleman and conversationalist. Pushing 80, he and the Rock and Rye show no signs of slowing down. Before I left, I asked him what was on his agenda for the rest of the day.
Unloading the wood and going to the post office and the library and the grocery store. And then I'm going to run again for a half hour because something might be gaining on me. Yeah, running down a dream.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Aaron Dorbin.
Thanks for traveling Wyoming's Lincoln Highway with us. This series was produced by Wyoming Public Media in collaboration with the Wyoming State Historic Preservation Office. I'm Micah Schweitzer.